Welcome to the Homeschool Nation podcast with Jeff Hoffman and Joshua Wirtz.
Today is a good day, Jeff.
Today is a good day. Why for you?
Well, for starters, I get to talk with you.
That is always nice.
It really is.
I always enjoy speaking with you.
Yeah, I do, especially with, you know, us living on other sides of a absurdly large nation. Absurdly large nation. Blah, I can't speak today.
You know what? I kind of started it off that way too. So, you know, it goes that way.
Yeah.
But it is an absurdly large nation, isn't it?
It really, really, really is. But yeah, but with us being so far apart, you know, and us having our own independent lives for such a long time, it's always a treat to be able to hear your voice.
Definitely. Same with you, man.
And
make no mistake, you know, as you listen to our podcasts, there's definitely a selfish element that underlies this whole thing where
totally
where it's like Josh and Jeff get to talk.
Yeah, primarily this is really for us. So if you want to join in, you are more than welcome to listen in and join. And then maybe one day we'll put together something to actually allow you to provide feedback if you want to join in. But for right now, just listening, because really this is for us right now.
Yeah, and I do look forward to the days of getting feedback from people, because I definitely want to cover things that people are interested in hearing or things that people are worried about in terms of homeschooling. And you and I are two guys that really just love to do research and love to learn things. So anything that gives me an excuse to learn something is also kind of selfishly motivated.
Yeah. How about you? How are you doing today?
You know what? I am I'm doing really well today, actually. I had the opportunity to take the kids to co-op today.
Nice.
Which, yeah, it's not normally something that I get to do. And we have a really awesome co-op out here that I feel is unique amongst homeschool co-ops. There's an educational element to it for sure, but there is a large aspect that is focused on just letting the kids be social and interact and just sort of just go play and be kids. So it's really cool, because, you know, my homeschool co-op when I was in high school was like, you know, we literally had to sneak off to be able to have conversations and just sort of hang out. And it was so academically driven that it made most of my college courses look like a joke. So I appreciate having this for my kids. And it was a good co-op, don't get me wrong. Like, it was really good. It was an awesome co-op that I had, but it's just really cool to let kids be kids in a time where that's not common, you know?
Oh, yes, definitely not. Well, not if you want your kid to be something, right? You know, not if you want your kid to be a professional athlete, not if you want your kid to get into Ivy League, you know, colleges and universities, you know, not if, you know, like none
be
of this
president,
stuff.
President,
like,
you know.
Oh, my gosh. It's, you know, I feel underqualified to go back and apply just for college as a full on adult who's been, you know, functioning inside the real world. I doubt I would even get accepted.
It's funny because there was a few years ago, there was a conversation that was had between myself and a few other attorneys and a judge at a lawyer's dinner for the Bar Association. And the judge said, I am not qualified to pick my law clerk because their qualifications are all so much better than my resume was that, you know. but it really, it really does speak to the absurdity. You know, I mean, we just, and as homeschoolers, sometimes I wonder, like, we've opted out of the system, basically. You know, for one reason or another, we've all said, okay, yeah, I get that society doesn't really back me on this, right? The popular opinion does not support homeschooling, but I don't really care. And yeah, I could make more money if I went to work and my spouse went to work and we just put the kids in public school. We'd have more money. We'd have all this stuff, but we've opted out. And I feel like there's a lot of families, even the homeschool community, that they're driving their kids into a life that they've opted out of.
Well, that is one of the benefits of being a parent, it's either a benefit or it's a terrible fear of just being a parent, whether you're a homeschooler or whether you're not. I mean, obviously, we're all, the choices that we make and how we raise our children can affect, you know, opportunities, can affect the outlook and the perspective, can affect so many parts of our child's lives that, you know, it's really a daunting thing to even begin to consider, which is probably part of the reason why I think homeschooling is so, I don't want to use the word taboo because I feel like that's a little bit too strong, but less accepted.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's ironically so because homeschoolers have such great acceptance rates at universities and tend to do so well on entrance exams and things of that nature. I mean, really outpacing, traditionally educated students.
They definitely do it in a lot of ways, though. I do have an interesting story, which I think this is the perfect place to share.
Oh, let's go.
I don't know if I've ever shared this with you. So my cousins, I have they're three boys under a family. They actually grew up being homeschooled, and I found this actually very interesting. There was they ended up going to this college, and the youngest went to the college, and he ended up getting this great, amazing scholarship. And I was asking him about it, or he was telling me about it one day, because it actually turns out they ended up taking his scholarship away. And I was asking him, like, well, why are they taking your scholarship away? I'm like, well, I applied for the scholarship. It's for people who graduated as valedictorian. And I technically graduated as top of my class in homeschool. So I applied for it. And somehow it came out that they gave it to me. And then after they reviewed my records and saw that I was homeschooled, they decided they took it right back.
They're like, well, you were also the bottom of your class. So
yeah. Yeah. So I thought this is it really, really is. My family tends to think outside of the box here a little bit.
I love it.
That's a total Wirtz perspective right there on you for you. To me, I mean, that's goes into kind of like what to roll it into what we've been talking about, parents, we're making decisions that can affect our children, whether or not they're going to get into this good schools. You know, they may excel amazingly academically. They may spend, majority of their high school years, in a community college or in a local university taking college level courses, because they're technically not old enough to actually graduate and go full into college. And yet still, they're excluded from things like some sort of, scholarships, because they technically can't be the top 25% of their class. You know, they aren't valedictorians. They aren't like all these sort of social standards and norms inside of the education system. You know, even if they went to a small private school that had 20 kids in their entire class, they still would have those sort of options available to them. But the moment that you move into this homeschool setting, it's a completely different story. You're removing them out of that narrative completely.
And it's kind of ironic because there's definitely some homeschool families that have 20 kids. So.
Yes, but hopefully there's no dodeca tuplets.
Oh, that would be bad. That would just be
yeah.
I mean, I my wife and I have twins, and
Are you impressed with that, by the way, that I pulled that out, dodeca?
I am actually. I wouldn't have been able to go there. I wouldn't have, you know. I don't have that lexicon of weird. All I have is like octogenarians, you know, because.
Is that 80-year-olds?
Yeah, because in the law, there's the fertile octogenarian is this hypothetical situation where you're like trying to determine, you know, how a will gets worded. And so, you know, hundreds of years ago, somebody was like, "Whoa, what if the octogenarian is still fertile?" And that's the kind of absurdity that we deal with in the law.
That would be a problem with the more of the male octogenarians. I don't think that's typically a issue that's run into with female.
Not typically. I feel like
or non-binary. Or, you know, I don't know. Like that's the problem. Once you get into non-binaryism, I don't know.
Wow.
Sorry. I know we're going way off track. But anyways, Jeff, continue.
Well. And you know what? I know that this isn't exactly what we had in mind when we started this podcast, but it's definitely something that that interests me and that sometimes concerns me when I look at homeschoolers because, you know, I homeschooled, so when I look at all of my friends that were in my co-ops and stuff, and I see that none of them homeschool. It makes me question whether or not their parents missed something in the education. Like it was so focused on achieving. And I think the achieving, the push for your kids to achieve as homeschool students, I think it's rooted in like two different things. Usually I think it's rooted partially in fear, like, oh my God, I don't want to let them fall behind. What if I mess up? Like, you know, what if I ruin their lives? So you have that, and that pushes you to push them and have really high standards. And then I think on top of that, you've got something to prove. You know, even if you don't want to have that attitude, you've got all the family members who have questioned your decision and every random stranger who feels like they have the right to say something, right, and tell you whether or not it's appropriate for you to homeschool your kid. And so that combination leads to a lot of people pushing their kids, you know, at 100 miles an hour. And it makes me wonder if they miss a little bit that part that's like, hey, I'm homeschooling you because this is really what I believe is best for you. But also, I fully love this time that I'm getting with you. And if you don't take advantage of this in your life, if you don't, not that my kids have to homeschool or anything, but that, you know, if you don't embrace the moment, it'll be gone. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of being driven to like the presidency, maybe be driven towards a life of fulfillment and happiness, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I could see. I mean, honestly, that's probably a more difficult accomplishment inside of our society, is to teach our kids to be fulfilled and healthy and versus driven. I mean, teaching someone to be driven, our American economic platform that essentially just exists, like the American, I'll call it the American culture as it is, short of, you know, using the word zeitgeist.
I'd even go as far as to say Western civilization.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. Western civilization, like all of that motivation, it just, you know, as far as like the, you know, capitalism being like the cure, being the pure motivational source, being essentially the pure driving force inside of our culture, you know, it all comes down to, you know, how successful you are financially, which equates to how successful you are. You know, it essentially, happiness is success. I guess is probably a way of distilling that down.
Yeah, and not that that's what you're saying or what either of us believe, but that's the sort of cultural norm.
Yeah, that's the cultural message that's received, and versus, you know, I want to teach my kids that, you know, happiness is, you know, success is happiness, not happiness is success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a great book called The Happiness Hypothesis by Jonathan Haidt, and in it he goes through, you know, all of the things that the ancients valued and the things that we value, and all of the scientific evidence in support of what actually does or doesn't lead to happiness. And, you know, and he sort of concludes that we have that sense that success will equal happiness, more money will equal happiness, more things will equal happiness. And so we strive to achieve, but, you know, it doesn't ever get you there. There's an element to it. There's certainly an extent to which happiness does come from having your basic needs met. Because there's a lot more stress in life when your basic needs aren't met, when you're worried about providing food or shelter or clothing.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it very quickly drops off. And the payoff for the extra money just isn't there. And for the material things, it's just not there.
Right.
You know, and to me, it's so ironic that we live in this time where never before in history have human beings been able to provide for their needs with less work or time. We can work, you know, a minimal number of hours and make sure that we have a roof over our heads for the most part and food in our stomachs. For the most part. Obviously, there are exceptions to this and people in really difficult situations. But for the most part, instead of taking that extra free time and spending it with family and friends and things that have real meaning and value, right?
Mm-hmm.
We voluntarily give up more of our time to consume things, like to have a nicer car, to have a bigger house, none of which actually provides happiness. It's just crazy.
True. Or all it really does is it provides distractions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, that's one of the things that I wonder. So I know in my house and in our homeschool, that's something that we cover pretty extensively, because I don't want them to fall into that trap. And at the same time, I do have to leave a little room open in my brain to accept, like, okay, maybe for somebody else that makes sense. Like Steve Jobs. I have such a hard time with that one, because the dude knew he was dying. Like, he was in the last days of his life, and he knew it. I mean, he knew he had cancer. And he's got a wife and a kid, and instead of spending time with them, he's developing the Apple product line for the years, the first few years after he dies. That's freaking insane to me. I cannot relate with it. I don't understand it. It wasn't to, like, provide for his family, because he had already had $1 billion, you know, like, they were going to be taken care of.
Right.
So, you know, is it just that he was insane, or is it that maybe for some people actual happiness is not found in meaningful relationships but in developing product lines? I don't know.
Well, so for me, the way that I view that as is, you know, his he was less concerned about product lines versus he was concerned about his legacy. To him, you know, no marital relationship, no child that he had, was his legacy. His legacy was the corporation that he helped to found and build. And his vision, right? His vision and his corporation, that's his legacy.
What a sad thought though.
Right. But that was his concern is that I want my legacy to last beyond me. Cause he knew exactly what happened, you know, when they replaced him, in the 90s, you know, they kicked him out as being CEO, and they brought in somebody else, and Apple just started tanking horribly. They started producing all their plastic-based products, you know, all the different weird colored Macs. They did a whole bunch of stuff, and they just were flopping and tanking horribly. And then, you know, it wasn't very long. They ended up bringing him back, and Steve ended up, you know, bringing back, you know, reviving it into this big, you know, ecosystem. You know, the iPod, you know, the iPhone. Taking back, you know, the Macs into making them a more exclusive experience, as you know, a whole ecosystem and experience instead of just a computer. But yeah, like his primary motivation, I would say, from, you know, obviously from looking from the outside, not knowing the guy personally, for him it was all about legacy, and his legacy was the Apple Corporation. And I think that is what, you know, and I guess really that the true key motivation, I think, for everybody is, you know, what is your legacy? That is really a question for everybody, right? I mean, and that's really, to me, the core of what the things that you were talking about, even, right? What is my legacy? You know, you were talking about you want your legacy to be, you know, to teach your kids about, you know, finding joy, you know, to find joy in your family, find joy in their life experiences, right? To, like, that is the legacy that you want to leave.
And yeah, I guess that's a factor. I guess, and for me, I think it's less of a factor than it is for somebody like Steve Jobs, who is so concerned about that he is allowing his life to sort of be dictated by that. Whereas for me, it's, you know, it's as much about, it's less about legacy than it is about caring about the quality of the life that my kids actually have as they grow up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it definitely does for me, like my motivation of where are my kids right now? What kind of life experiences are they having? And I think even bigger key motivation for me is what's their life experience going to be like when they, you know, when I'm not responsible for them.
Exactly. You know, absolutely.
You know, I want to make sure that they are prepared and ready to be fully functioning adults, you know, whether that, you know, and personally right now, I don't necessarily think that means being a fully functioning part of society, but being a person that stands outside of that and willing to say, hey, this isn't right, you know, say figure out sure. what's good and what's important, and being able to stand outside of that with conviction.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think for both of us in our families and our wives, it's teaching them how to think not just outside the box, but think critically for themselves. Like, don't just accept it because somebody said it. That's not how this works. And don't just do it because everybody else does it. It you know, that's not necessarily going to lead you to happiness. You know, it's not necessarily what society sells you. Actually, in most cases, it's probably the opposite of what society sells you that will actually give you a sense of a meaningful, happy life.
So, Jeff.
Yeah.
This, I know that you and I have been really on board with what we've been talking here, as so much as for, you know, we've been kind of building off of each other and really kind of agreeing with what we've been saying. Though, to be honest with you, I'm sure that there's probably a lot of other homeschool parents or kids, that may not agree with it, with this kind of stuff.
Sure, sure.
What do you feel like is a message that you would have for those folks?
That is an excellent question. So, and I'm sure that, you know, if anybody listens to more than a few of our podcasts, they're going to find something that they disagree with that we say. I actually hope they do. I hope that as you listen to our podcasts, that you find something that you can cling to and say, okay, I totally disagree with these guys on this point, or one of these guys, because Josh and I definitely don't always agree. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We actually, I would say we rarely agree.
It's true. It's true. So then you've got to deal with confronting this idea. I mean, we're at this place in our society where people are very, very divided, right? Divided by politics, divided by religion, and everybody's in their camp. And people tend to only listen to the side that says what they want to hear. And so when you hear somebody say something that you don't agree with, it's naturally going to freak you out a little bit. The reason why I hope that you hear something you disagree with is because it means that you're thinking for yourself. I think you should be really scared whenever you have somebody who you can't think of a single thing that you disagree with that person on. Because if you can't think of anything that you disagree with somebody on, then either you have outsourced your thinking to them, or they have outsourced their thinking to you, or else they're lying to you and just manipulating you.
Or even vice versa, that you both have outsourced your thinking to somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so it, you know, all of us are imperfect. We're all wrong about something. And if I asked you to tell me right now what it was that you're wrong about, you couldn't do it because, well, you don't know you're wrong about it. And the things that I'm wrong about, I don't know I'm wrong about. We're just all kind of trying to figure this thing out. And we're going to miss the mark sometimes. And we hope that when you hear the thing you disagree with, it's something that you can discuss with your family and that you can all talk about and work through, even if you still in the end disagree, because it gives you the opportunity to having heard a different voice or a different perspective, gives you the opportunity to discuss, you know, core values or beliefs or whatever. But the idea that you should agree with everything or even most things that a person says in order to be able to listen to them and hear their thoughts and benefit in some way is way off base in my mind.
Yeah, I would definitely fully agree with that. I think that I think one of the hardest things that I think that I find, at least in today's public discourse, whether it's political, whether it's scientific, whether it's, you know, sociological, like there's just the whole gamut, you know, even if it's religious, it's so much simpler. And I find that a lot of people, and I'll admit that there are times where I'm guilty of this too, and I have to sit back and I have to reevaluate sometimes what I've been thinking. It's really, really easy to, you know, to take the, I'll call it the meme approach to, you know, to arguments or perspectives, you know, where you distill somebody's perspective into like a single one liner with a really poor image, in order to, you know, either villainize, or to, triumphantly, you know, place that view above somebody else's. And it's just so, it's very, very simple to do that. You know, at least in our mindsets, it's more of like a human condition. I would not know enough psychologically or sociologically to really describe the phenomena. But like that most that I could describe is almost a sort of a herd based mentality, where if you hear something that sounds good in your gut, you know, you're willing to get behind whoever said it. And you're willing to almost even in some cases willing to die for it.
And I think that's definitely one of the things that we hope to help people see through and to change.